Archimedes, welcome to IWide Radio episode 4.9. I'm your host, Jim, and I'm joined by the host of our hit show, Full Circle, Jack Smith, and the host of The Sheriff, Mr. Kyle Warner. If you're not listening live, please make sure to subscribe, follow, and listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Spreaker. Quick shout out to the affiliate sites, fullpresscoverage.com and bellyupsports.com. While you're listening to the episode, check out our site, hwhockey.net. Before we get to the topics for the episode, this episode is brought to you by MyBookie. Let's read this quick app. Quick, when it comes to gambling, you always want to make sure you get the best bang for your buck. Why always bet with MyBookie. At MyBookie, you can bet on all your favorite sports with exclusive promotions, contests, and more to find your winning bet. Right now, when you make your first deposit with MyBookie, you'll instantly receive double your first deposit. It's easy. All you got to do is go to mybookie.ag. Sign up and use promo code HIGHANDWIDE, and MyBookie will double your first deposit instantly up to $1,000. How's that for fast money? Use your extra funds to bet on this week's biggest games, including the battle between the Chiefs and Titans in the NFL, where air mail offense takes on smash-mouth football. Look for the score to run up quickly. Bet the over. This promotion is only available for a limited time, so don't miss out. Head over to mybookie.ag. Use promo code HIGHANDWIDE and secure your double deposit bonus today. That's promo code HIGHANDWIDE so you can double your funds to double your winnings. Bet anything, bet anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. Woo! What's up, guys?
Well done.
That's a lot. That's a mouthful.
I think I was ever going to finish that. Yeah. Let's talk about some hockey. So a couple things going on in Flyerland. It was actually fun to watch a Flyers game last night for the first time since the first period of game one or the last 2 minutes of game one. Let's start right away with maybe the guy setting the tone potentially for the rest of the team. Now, we're going to get to a lot of players tonight, but I want to start off first with Captain Claude. He's come out guns blazing, guys, and in my opinion, is setting the tone. He actually looks like the leader I think a lot of us want him to be in terms of leading by example, being the emotional leader. I want to hear your guys' thoughts on Claude Giroux. And while we talk about him, I'm just going to play a little montage of his goals.
Well, Captain Claude, I mean, it is a contract year. No, I'm not going to go negative like that. He's definitely come out guns a-blazing. Having him call that play, like shouting out to Couturier to tie against Vancouver, was huge. I mean, that was awesome. And then to get the thing, I mean, I think Hart saves really got the game against the Kraken going, but still to rip a one timer and open up the scoring early, which really opened up the floodgates. You just see right now he's making that top line go. He's making the team offensively go. And it's exactly what you want to see from not just him, but the top line early on in the season, because that's what they're getting paid to do. And it's perfect to see it happen. And they're beauties too. These aren't like lucky goals. This is skillful. This is hardworking. It's just one of many things. Yeah, it's been two games, but one of many things that we are seeing that's going right. And it's a big thing.
Yeah. He looks like he's playing on his own level at this point. It looks like he's moving his feet. Looks like he has some quickness back. He's making quick decisions. I mean, everything he's doing right now, I mean, granted, it's only two games, but I caught it last night on Twitter. It looks like Claude Giroux is going to put up 30 goals this year if he keeps playing this way.
Dude, he looks motivated. He looks refreshed, in my opinion. I don't want to say he looks like a new player. And Jack, to one of your points, I don't think that's, you know, so much negative as it is the truth. It's a contract year. You know, he's not getting any younger, doesn't have a Stanley Cup. I mean, what other reason is there to play for if you're not playing for money, you know? So, but that could work to the Flyers' benefit. You know, that's fine with me. If he's in a contract a year and he's going to go balls to the wall and, you know, have another 30-goal season, you know, 80, 85 points, whatever, benefits the Flyers. It's fun to watch. That's fine. I don't think that's negative at all.
The only thing that concerns me, all that being said, is Does he play his way out of Philly? Because we can't afford another big contract for Claude Giroux. That's just not there. That's a no go. No matter how well he plays, you literally can't afford it.
Yeah, it's true. It'll be interesting to see. Maybe he goes the Coots routes and takes a home team discount. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see him and Coots have similar seasons because we expect a lot out of Couturier and see him hold the Flyers over a barrel. Like that would be not that he doesn't technically deserve it because we gave him nothing for the majority of his career. I mean, financially, we took care of him, but yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. But I also thought about our conversation about the Flyers having like 5 to 7 20 goal scorers and looking who scored already and how many, you know, Drew, Farabee, and Couturier, Konechny both all have 2 goals already. Yep. And it's kind of like, you know, it's not going to go this way the whole season, you know, so I'm not, it's great start. Don't get me wrong, but we know it's going to probably even out at some point. And, you know, God forbid the injury bug doesn't bite. But early on now, yeah, it's definitely something to think about.
Well, since you know, we're kind of on that topic of, you know, potentially 720 goal scorers. Are you guys sensing like I am a potentially new mentality amongst the forwards where, you know, in terms of instead of being so passive and looking to make the pretty play to set the next guy up, that these guys are shooting. When they got a prime scoring chance, they're taking the shot. And in some cases, you know, in Cam Atkinson's, I think it was Farabee's goal, the 6th goal last night, you know, you saw the classic just shoot at the goalie so that he deflects it to the other end. And there was Farabee to put the goal away. So they're shooting even to pass now. You know what I'm saying? Are you guys noticing that or am I just, you know, wanting to see that maybe?
No, I think there's definitely an I don't want to say incentive. Like it seems like there has been an incentive to shoot the puck more than last year and years prior.
Maybe initiative is the word you're looking for there. More
exactly. There you go. And it was needed. We've been calling for it for years. How many times are you going to come over the blue line, stop and wait for people to catch up before you just kind of try to force your way to the slot and get some kind of chance going instead of turning it over and going the other way? Jake Voracek.
We have literally been calling for it from the stands at the top of our lungs. So it's quite nice to see. You know what I think it is, honestly? It's I got to give Fletcher credit. It's that changing up the core, getting rid of a guy like Voracek, showing that nobody is truly, I don't want safe isn't the right word, but like, we're expected to do things differently now with new players. Much of the players we brought in do shoot, and it, you know, scoring is fun. It's contagious and it's how you win games, you know, and we're doing things differently now. That's the whole thing. Different. We're going to be different. Fletcher said that himself at the beginning of the year, I think before the beginning of the off season, even. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing them play differently. There were some certain visions in game one I saw that reminded me of previous seasons, but like after this Seattle game, everybody's shooting. Like, and that's what we need to see. Like, they're playing differently, and we're seeing the benefits, at least early.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's kind of talk about at least some of the differences that you saw there, Jackie mentioned. And I don't want to get to Carter Hart yet, but differences from game one to game two. You know, they started out hot. They kind of went into a lull. They took a bunch of penalties in the second period. In game one, what were the differences you saw from game one to game two with the Flyers team?
Game one for me, it really looked like they came out firing on all cylinders and Vancouver just kind of didn't know how to deal with the tenacity and the energy from first home opener. They're just coming out flying. And then it kind of seemed like Vancouver never really got out of their system. And the Flyers got a little tired getting into the second period, into the third period. They kind of looked like they weren't exactly sure what they were doing because what they were doing in period one wasn't working, albeit like, or whether it was like lack of energy, not being able to press as hard as they wanted to. It kind of seemed like they petered out after that first period. Whereas in game two, it kind of seemed like it was a more even keel across the board. Yeah, there was some chances, big chances for the Kraken in period one, and the Flyers kind of stood tall, but they never stopped pushing, and they didn't, I don't want to say like over pushed, but they didn't overexert themselves. They kind of stayed within their system and what they were doing, and it just worked. So they just stayed there and were doing what they were doing, if that makes sense.
Jack, you want to follow up?
Yeah, the biggest the two similarities right off the bat is the first periods, both games were action-packed and fast-paced, but the difference was they only came away with one goal in the first game. And I think that, you know, Vancouver was able to say, hey, it's only one goal, and I think they adjusted. I think they pressured the forwards on the forecheck in the neutral zone. That caught the Flyers out of position, particularly where Konechny missed on a poke check. He attempted a poke check, and Yandle was a little out of position, but either way, Tyler Myers wasn't letting him over. Tough save to make. Hart doesn't come up with it. Suddenly the game's tied. Add in the penalties and the fluky goals, and suddenly that game rolls out of control. And it was looking like that second period was the lowest I've been in a long, since last season, like since I realized that like their season was over last year, because that had all the makings of Hart just being completely in his head the whole season. Like, it was like, are you serious? These BS goals are going to happen in game one, two of them like that. Everybody's already questioning Hart. Twitter explodes with the whole, the other thing. And you have to like ignore it, but in the back of your mind, you're like, what, when's it going to end? Like, enough. So, to see him come back as strong as he did in overtime was like a huge, I don't want to say relief, but it made me feel so much better. So when they went into game two and he had to bounce back, and he certainly did. So I feel like they played a full 60 for the first time I've seen in a while last night, where in the first game, I think they played the first period. They took off the second. It's Atkinson did get a goal, but they really didn't play much of the third until the last 2.5 minutes either. You know, so they really, that was reminiscent of the old Flyers. They did salvage a point, so you can't hate it. But it was literally a 30-minute effort versus 60-minute effort, and you saw the difference.
Another thing that really annoyed me with that first game against Vancouver, they started reverting back to that throw the puck up the boards to nobody and just hope somebody's there. Like, no actual look, no actual breakout, just toss it. And then Vancouver was just turning around and coming back in the zone.
Yeah, it seems like once the fluky goals went in, they start. You know, they were already taking penalties, and then they reverted back to some of their old ways. A lot of people, like the first name you hear in that first game that people don't like is Hart, obviously. The next one is Sanheim. Like, people were not big on Sanheim's, you know, big body play, which is a joke. And tell me if I'm wrong here, a perfect metaphor for how that game went is when there's 4 seconds left in overtime, instead of just throwing the puck on the net, Sanheim just kind of skates away and lets it go to a shootout, which we historically are horrible at, you know? And it's like, yeah, would he have scored? No, probably not. There wasn't enough time left. He would have had a weird chance and he would have needed a weird bounce. But did we really think they were going to tie the game down to 2 minutes left? No, probably not. So throw the puck on net. Like, come on. You know, but once he turned away, the crowd booed. It like took all the air out of the building, and then they went out with a whimper in a shootout, which we kind of expected anyway. But yeah, he responded better in the second game. He's not perfect by any means, but besides Hart, Sanheim was definitely something that stuck out from game one to game two. It was night and day with him.
Why do you guys think that is?
It's tough. I mean, it's game one, so I don't want to be too critical. Vancouver had played a game or two coming in. This was our first game. And there was a play, like, I just – obviously with the one goal, he's not pushing anybody out of the way. He's not taking care of guys in front. I don't even know why he's on the penalty kill. I'm hoping it's just until Ristolainen comes back. Penalty kill. And then, like, early in the third period, like, I glance down, I glance back up, and he's already on his ass trying to, like, get the puck out of the zone like this, like from a weird position. I'm just like, he's already down again. I'm sure somebody skated by him too fast. You know, I'm really frustrated with him, but I'm not going to say anything yet because I'd be speculating. I'm still speculating, but I'm going with, it's early. You know, he's not playing with the guy that he was supposed to be playing with. Maybe that has something to do with it, but he's not going to play physically. That's just is what it is. Like, that's how he's always been.
No, nobody's arguing. Like, I don't, want people to think, like, when we're when we're critical of Sanheim, that and his physical play and his size, we don't think one game Sanheim's just going to be like, hey, guess what? I'm 6'3 and I can hit people. We understand that it's not his style. The same way we understand JVR doesn't really play that way. Occasionally he does. That's cool. But you know what I'm saying? And then you have...
He is what he is.
Exactly. He is what he is. But at that same time, I can't literally take you serious when you're standing there staring at the puck in Hart's skate, not even worrying about anybody else on the ice. You're just staring at the puck. Like, turn around and try to keep somebody from jabbing it in, which is exactly what they did on the play.
Yeah, there's a difference in thinking a guy who's, you know, is going to run somebody who's not that guy and just trying, you know, to clear your crease, because there it's literally leading towards to goals. Like, I don't expect you to Chris Pronger this, but Christ, try, be disruptive, like, do something. Like, that part's aggravating. In game two, he played his game. Like, he was, I think that break that Braun scored on, it was Braun and Sanheim, the two defensemen. Like, great, that's where Sanheim is, you know, in his all his glee. That's what he does. But you can't be one dimensional. This is why we didn't like Ghost. Like, well, most of us, like, you need to play the full game. You need to play your defense. Like, now he does break up plays. Like, he does break up plays with his stick, usually in the neutral zone. I don't want to throw him completely under the bus, but you just can't, you know, pass on a category of the game that's very much still in the game. And you have to be a little physical at times. The teams are so unafraid of him that they park right in front of they have the picnic in front of the crease. Like, it's silly. You can't have that.
Not to change subjects to players here, but one of the most impressive stick checkers I think I've seen play in a very long time, Keith Yandle. He, even when he looks like he's beat, he gets a stick out there and knocks the puck away somehow. I don't get it. Like, he's just skillful with his stick.
Three assists through two games, too, I believe.
That's another thing. His passes through the neutral zone, his first pass, even the one to Konechny through the neutral zone into the zone that sent Konechny in, they're things of beauty, man. Like, I don't think I've ever seen Ghost complete passes like that.
Stick around to the end of the episode. We'll have all of last night's goals in a montage for you guys. So if you're wondering, oh, maybe you missed that goal, we'll have it for you. We got it for you. Here on HW, we got everything for you. Everything you need. Goals, the fights. One thing I did want to mention about Travis Sanheim. You want to know how I knew he had a good game last night? Who can guess it?
The analytic crowd showed up.
I didn't hear his name one time throughout that game. Not once. Yes.
I didn't hear any Flyers names except for when Hart made that save. That was the only time or somebody scored. That was it.
But my point is, that's a good game for Sanheim. I feel like if you're hearing Sanheim's name these days, like it used to be like with Ghost, it's a bad thing. You know, he's playing with, I think he played with Braun last night. You know, if you don't hear either of those guys' names, it's a good thing. You know, and I'm thinking back to, I think the play just before Braun actually scored a goal, he actually got back on defense and nullified a Seattle scoring chance, you know. I don't know. If you don't hear those two guys' names while they're playing together, they had a great game and they ended up even scoring a couple points last night. I was happy. I'm not the biggest right now. I'm on the fence with Sanheim and I'm more leaning towards, I don't really like this guy, but, we'll see what he can do in the next, you know, in the next couple of games, couple of weeks, what happens, you know, maybe he can redeem himself. He's never going to be, like you guys are saying, he's never going to be that physical presence. That's part of the reason why they paired him up with Ristolainen. Because if you have another soft player playing with Sanheim, the other team's going to have a field day in the crease. So we'll see. We'll see how that, you know, how things shake out with Sanheim. I did want to talk about real quick Justin Braun for a second, because I don't know if you guys, I mean, I just want to give credit where credit's due, you know, because that's what we do on this show. We don't have an agenda. You know, we're not going to, you know, look at numbers and, you know, shove them down your guys' throats for an hour. I thought Justin Braun played well last night. What do you guys think? He had a good game.
Yeah, multi-point night, goal and assists. Of course he had a good night. I mean, everybody really
February last year.
Yeah, but, you can't argue it. I mean, I thought he was going to pass because I rarely see him shoot.
It just trickled through, didn't it?
That puck trickles through, and boy, did he look happy.
I love when guys like him score, man.
Big smile. But on top of that, like, just the way they were running away with it and seeing Hacksaw on the bench was like, I was making me smile like you wouldn't believe.
That's that stupid, dumbfounded face. Like, what's going on?
He's never happy and he's never sad. It's always the same face.
It's funny. I'm already getting excuses about him. Like, I put a tweet out. I took a picture of my TV, and it was just like his that same exact face and his 3-0 Flyers. And all I said was, so nice to be on the other side of this. Probably my most successful tweet ever, but but never not a whole lot of comments. And there's one. Well, there's two. One's our friend Manny just put a GIF out that said yes, you know. But this other random one, it goes it, already a defense. In Hack's defense, his team is full of fourth liners and Eberle, but that stern look is classic. Last line is true. The top, the what he said before, that's like, here we go. He's got a built-in excuse already. The only excuse that I do believe is they played like 3 games and four or five nights or something like
that. They did.
I could see them being
all on the road too.
Right. Yeah, but like a bunch of fourth liners and Eberle, come on. They're not that bad. They have some good goaltending.
Eberle is not even their best player.
No, he's not. He's not. And they're definitely better than that. I you should have said like they were tired or whatever. But you know what? Hacksaw's not a guy that I think is, you know, dragging a team to through the standings. Like, there's no way. He's going to be part of the issue.
Yeah.
And it's super early. It's kind of stupid, to be honest, because it's so early. But still, I had this game circled for a reason. Can't lose the Hacksaw, especially after the way game one went. This is exactly what the doctor ordered.
And they play again tonight.
Oof, in New Jersey.
Wild. Yeah, and Jersey's up 2-0 on them. So it looks like it's going to be about the same.
That rookie, yeah.
Same story for tonight.
Jack Hughes scored?
I know Mercer scored. I don't know who got the other one.
Oh, Dawson Mercer. Wow. All right. So speaking of scoring goals, let's get back to the Flyers forwards real quick here. Jack, you mentioned a bunch of guys have 2 goals already. I only took 2 guys' names here. And, you know, one, because I'm particularly tough on this player, you know. Travis Konecny, 2 goals in the first 2 games of the season. I believe one was on the power play yesterday. Rips a shot from inside the slot, high slot. And I think he gets his own rebound. We'll have to go back and look. But Travis Konecny, 2 goals in 2 games. Are you guys happy with this game so far? We'll start with Jack first.
I mean, how could you not be? Part of the reason that the crowd has been great. Like, Jason Martinez had said that, like, the crowd should have got the star, first star, and they're not wrong. Like, I haven't heard the crowd. And this is in game one when that clock hit 0 to go to overtime. Like, I significantly noticed the crowd. And maybe it's because they weren't there last year, but they were rocking, absolutely rocking. I think Konecny feeds off that. I always thought that was just something people say. You know, oh, yeah, well, the crowd. I saw it. He feeds off of them. They feed off of him. And that the first goal he scored against Vancouver, was that a penalty? No. But whatever, man. He's being disruptive, causes a penalty. Then he scores the goal almost immediately. So that took some momentum, or took a lot of momentum for the Flyers, took it away for Vancouver. That was kind of like a, wow, really? And then for Seattle, I love that goal because he's not like he's a talented, skillful player. He's not exactly going to pick all the corners, though. He's a hardworking guy. So to see him get his own rebound like that, like, he will not be denied. I loved it. I loved that it was his own rebound and he just never gave up on the play. That's the Konecny that we need. That gnat that never goes away. It's always buzzing around the net. And to have 2 goals already, it's better than when he had the hat trick because it's multi game so far. Like, just keep this up. Get him hot. Keep him going. That top line, which we all, I think, were worried about their production, is already off to a hot start. This is one guy you needed this team to get going if they're going to score some goals. And thank God, so far, so good.
Kyle, you want to follow up on Travis Konecny?
Yeah, I mean, he's moving. Another one of those guys, man. He just plays 1,000 times better when his feet don't stop moving. You've seen a lot of games last year, that coasting, that I'm going to do a big circle and come back, and then I'm going to go for a line change. It doesn't appear to be the mentality this year from any of the guys. And like I said, Travis Konecny, when he's moving his feet, he is a constant, dangerous offensive player.
Very true. I'm hoping we see more from TK like this. You know, if he's not going to be doing all the extra stuff, all you really want him to do is put the puck in the net. One of my key players for last night's game was Sean Couturier. And, you know, it wasn't so much that he had to produce, but I wanted to see him get his line mates involved. You know, I'm talking Claude Giroux, Travis Konecny. And I don't know if Couturier had a direct impact in Konecny scoring a goal, but, you know, it's Kutz's line, and the guys on his lines are putting the puck in the net. So yeah, I'm happy with Konecny thus far. Keep putting the puck in the net, TK. And then carry it over into the playoffs. Next point was Joel Farabee. 4 points in two games. 2 goals, 2 assists. Are you impressed with Joel Farabee thus far? Kyle, we'll start with you first.
Absolutely. It's looking like an absolute steal of a contract now, ain't it, boys? This continues, he's going to be a 110-point guy in a couple of years. Like, this kid doesn't have an off button. He just doesn't have an off button. He doesn't give up on anything. I haven't seen him give up on a play yet in the few short seasons we've watched him play. I'm just – his style of play kind of makes me think of, like, Wade Allison, how hard they both play and they both try constantly. I just hope he can stay healthy. And if he stays healthy, man, you're looking at an 80-point player this year.
That would be phenomenal. My God. But like you said, it's like when Konecny signed his deal, similar money, similar years, and people were a little upset. Not so much with Farabee, but to see him immediately produce like Konecny did is fantastic. He's the future of this team. Do I think he's worth 2 first-round picks, Seth Jarvis, and whatever the hell else you wanted me for him, Jimmy? No, I don't. That's a little much. Yeah, Jimmy's trying to pull a fast one on me in fantasy. I forgot that fourth piece, but it was a lot.
I was like, wait, well, this is a weird trade, and it's I friggin' sent it.
It's your trade, yeah. Now I feel justified in declining it. But as far as the Flyers are concerned, if we're talking about Giroux and Konecny, Couturier, and that top line producing, one thing this team is always less the Giroux Voracek error is that secondary scoring. If you have Atkinson and Farabee pitching in that secondary scoring, and then Hayes comes back, like, sky's the limit. Even Broussard's looking good. Like, for his age, how is he that fast? How does that make sense? Sorry, I don't want to jump around.
He looks good.
That second line's buzzing, and it's only going to get better when Hayes comes back. Like, it's just – I think I saw that they have the most points for defensemen right now. It's 2 games, I get it. But, like it's still – like, everybody's chipping in. And to get that secondary scoring to go along with your top guys going, I mean, if they can keep this up, and this isn't an anomaly, this isn't a hot streak, and this is why Wednesday's such a big test for them early still. You know, that is exactly what we expect from the moves we've made. And we're not even at full capacity yet. You know, we're just sprinkling in some of the new guys. So not only are the new guys doing stuff because Ellis got a goal. We know Atkinson scored in the first game and they're buzzing. They're looking good. They're at no point are we worried about these guys. And then our guys get going that we were expecting to make the playoffs without all these new additions last year. The combination of the two is going to put this team into the stratosphere. Whether it's consistent or not, we'll see.
Very good points. Forget what I was going to add on to that. So why don't we – oh, you know what? It was about the defensemen. And you mentioned how the Flyers defensemen have the most points in the league right now. I think that is how AV's little system – I think that means it's working to – the way that it should work, because you want to see quick breakout passes, you want to see quick transition offense going the other way, and like bang bang, you know, lightning quick goals, like we've seen, you know, shots from the wing, like Atkinson, Konecny, the Farabee goal, all rushes the other way, outlet passes perfect from the defenseman, and you know, maybe defensemen are getting second assists on that, power play assists as well. Yandel, Ellis had 2 in the first game, very quietly, because I don't think we really, because the Flyers lost, and you know, the comeback was the big thing to talk about, the shootout loss. Ryan Ellis had 2 assists in the first game. Keith Yandle had 2 assists in the first game. Like, just keep an eye out for that. The Flyers' breakout passes, pay attention to the way that they're scoring goals. You know, it's not so much they're setting up in the zone. Right now, it's kind of quick strikes. You know, it's transition offense, breaks out of the defensive zone. It's fun to watch hockey, really.
Another thing I wanted to bring up, and I think a big reason the defense is getting involved more, is the forward group doesn't stop moving. So if there's a little bit of space, you got guys now like Yandle that do skate the puck into the neutral zone and still look for a pass. Yes, they still dump and chase. Yes, they still run a forecheck system. But they're looking for a pass. They're all moving their feet. At some point, somebody's getting open and a play's being developed. It almost looks like a lot of these plays were practiced. And yes, that's a big part of system play, but the way they're executing them, and again, granted, we're only 2 games in, but the way it's being executed, I mean, it almost looks like these guys have played together for 10 years.
They look how you want them to look, right? And like, that's positive. That's a good thing. Let's kind of transition.
Except Kubel.
Okay, I'm sorry. Except Kubel, who we're gonna keep things positive for a little bit here. We do have our guest coming on in just a few moments here, our head of draft coverage and prospects, Mr. John Gove. Before we get to John, let's get everybody a little bit psyched up, a little bit pumped up here. All right. So last night, we had 2 fights in a Flyers game. I think we had 2 fights, maybe 3, but we're going to say 2. Maybe 2 fights all of last year. Right, we watched Oscar Lindblom get in a fight. We watched Scotty Lawton get power bombed in a game. We're not going to see that anymore. You know why?
More in guys like Ross Johnston. Just saying.
Okay, yeah, Morin. I forgot about Morin. So we saw stuff like this last night.
Now Alexiak comes in late on Sealer, and you know, really, the Flyers up 5-0. This is exactly what the Kraken want. Sealer now over the referee, and they're going to go. It's Alexiak and Sealer. They're same in number in the uniform, 24, but not necessarily in size. Alexiak's huge, and they trade rights. Side up, right by Alexiak. Another right, and he got another right in there, and he's got that right loose. Sealer trying to counter, but Alexiak with that reach advantage. Now Sealer goes in tight. Alexiak pounding over the top. Switches hands, and the linesman steps in.
It's an outstanding job by Sealer. Look at him trying to fire the crowd up here. And love the attitude.
Kyle, I got to ask you first, right? Because I know you're seeding, you can't wait. What does taking on I think Alexiak, 6'8", right? And I don't know how tall Sealer is, but he looked like he was a foot shorter, maybe. What does that do for a hockey club watching a guy like Nick Sealer, who a couple days ago wasn't even on the roster, taking on the biggest guy by far on the ice?
And not just taking him on, but taking him on fearlessly.
Yeah.
He didn't just take this man on like, I'm going to hold on to him and fall down. Like, no, he took this on with every intention of trading fists with somebody who's 6 or 7 inches taller than him.
Yeah.
Now, I cannot explain to people who don't or haven't necessarily played the sport of hockey, but everybody on the Flyers bench balls grew about 3 or 4 inches. I mean, that you see that and you want to run through a brick wall for the guy. I mean, just listen to the fans. They wanted to run through a brick wall for the guy. I'm on my couch ready to break something in half because I was so pumped. This is one of the most exciting games I've seen in years.
You know, one of my favorite parts about that, as Kyle says fearlessly, let's remember he also eliminated the referee. He just threw the referee out of the way because he couldn't wait to get at him, which I thought was hysterical watching back. I had people asking me, are they allowed to do that? I'm like, technically
nobody
not.
Remembers.
Yeah. Threw the official out of the way because he couldn't wait to get his hands on a guy that much taller than him. And he I agree with everything Kyle said. He held his own. Everybody was pumped. The crowd was pumped. He was pumped. And that bench was in sure as hell pumped.
You know what you're not going to find on a stat sheet, boys? Balls. Guts. Emotion. You're not going to find it on a stat sheet. Nick Sealer, I don't know what his analytics are, but I'm sure they suck. But you know what he brings to the table? Emotion. And he gets the rest of the team fired up. You're not going to find that in the analytics. Nothing against the analytics, but you can't judge a player like Nick Sealer, the next guy we're going to bring up, Nate Thompson. You can't judge them off their analytics. They're probably not going to be good, but they bring intangibles. Speaking of Nate Thompson, you don't mess with the Flyers captain, all right? Or this is what's going to happen to you this year.
And Bastion finally do go uppercuts to the body, and now over the top by Thompson. Bastion on the receiving end here as Thompson just hammers away, uppercuts as it measured. Bastion in defense mode here, and he's unable to get going, and down he goes. Nate Thompson getting a standing ovation, as you might expect from the crowd. Adulation from his teammates as he roars into the penalty box.
Jack, what did that mean to you? What did that mean to the rest of the team seeing Nate Thompson? You know, the Flyers are up, I think, 6-1 at that point. Not forget that this little bug over here was messing with the captain earlier in the game. Now, the Flyers, I think, were up at 5-0 at that point. But he didn't forget. And he went after him and gave him the ass beating of his life. What do you think that meant to the Flyers team? What did that mean to you to see that?
I meant everything. I stood up off the couch because he didn't forget, because the game was out of hand and it was unnecessary. He's like, no, I don't care what the score is. You don't do that shit. And so the fact that he went at him, and he went at him hard. He was looking for the knockout blow. Like, that was fantastic. It's exactly why you don't mess with this team. It is the shining example of, we will not be messed with like we were last year. There will be no more jackknife power bombs at center ice. If you even consider touching anybody, especially our captain, he's going to run his fist through your helmet into your face. And Bastion, my God, that poor guy. He just hanging on for dear life. And whew, as encouraging and courageous as the first fight was, that was a just smackdown. Like, that was complete opposite, but still had all the effects, if not better. And it's another thing I see that's different from last year to this year, that's going to pay dividends.
Yeah. Kyle, go ahead.
What words can describe the emotions that were coursing through every Flyers fan's veins watching that take place? I mean, we went from, like you guys said, from heartless play last year, gutless play last year, everybody just whatever, we don't care, to a player not just once, not just twice, but eventually beat the brakes off of another player for going after the captain.
Yeah. About time. Like, you love to see it, right? Because it wasn't just like, we're up 6-1, you know, forget about that guy, let's move on. It was, we're going to beat your ass in the score, and we're going to stick up, you know, we're not going to forget. Don't do stupid shit, because it's good. What I say earlier, play stupid games, win stupid prizes. That's what's going to happen when you play the Flyers this year. And you know, put all teams on notice, right, in game two. So we're not going to see as much, you know, we're not going to see jackknife power bombs anymore, like Jack said. I hope.
And guess what? They're about to get even tougher.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Who we got coming in?
I can never pronounce his last name properly.
Zach McEwen?
McEwen. Yeah. McEwen. I always say McEwen. McEwen.
McGoo.
Either way, you add another layer of tough player, physical player, forechecking player with a little bit of offensive upside. Guy can skate very well for 6'4". He's a big body. And I just think that, I mean, I don't know if you guys seen his interview today, but he looked a little disappointed, him and Ristolainen, that they were not in last night's game.
That's right, Risto. I forgot Risto wasn't even playing. And here's the thing about McEwen. is he's not just, you know, he's not just, you know, I don't want to say goons because they don't really exist anymore, but the guy can play a little bit. He could put the puck in the net. Like, this is a player that they're getting that can fight too. He's not just, you know, a guy that's going to beat you up every other game. So I just want to make sure that people know that. So when this guy goes in the lineup, that's the first, well, I don't want to make sure we're not the Broad Street Bullies again. No. I mean, did you have fun last night? Last night was fun. I don't know why we were
afraid of being the Broad Street. Did anybody remember,
Jesus.
Just night and day from last season, they would lose 6-1 and get their asses beat. Now it's like the script has been flipped, and it feels damn good.
It does feel damn good. You know what else feels damn good? Bringing in the head of our draft coverage and prospects, Mr. John Gove. John, thanks for hanging out with us, man. How are you?
What's going on, boys? I feel like I've just stepped up another level as far as production. I'm used to, you know, the Pod Street Bullies where we have no idea what we're doing when it comes to production. All of a sudden, I'm sitting in this like little waiting room thing and I'm watching video highlights. There's this little ticker thing on the bottom. I'm like, what is this, ESPN? Holy moly.
Dude, I'm getting real lucky with a lot of stuff tonight. Usually I'll make like 2 hours worth of videos and forget to play them all. And it's like, you know, the biggest waste of time. So, yeah
when you're telling me you're going to cut video, I was like, what? No, don't do that. I'm not prepared for video being cut, man.
Okay, good.
Footage.
You know, I have to admit, I could not find footage of one of the players that we're going to talk about. So I just decided to scrap it all. Maybe the next time we'll get you on and have some videos. So, John, head of HW draft coverage and prospect talk. Now you have a new an installment that you're, you know, writing about on HWHockey.net. Flyers Prospects Weekly. I believe it was the most recent installment that you put out was about Morgan Frost, right? He was like the talk of Flyers Twitter for at least, I don't know, 2 days. I mean, really, ever since camp started, it's been Morgan Frost, Morgan Frost. Obviously, news comes out the other night, you know, didn't play. Was it the entire third period?
He had four shifts at the beginning of the third period.
I think how the scenario went, the fans were actually losing by a goal or so. And, you know, Lappy, they had a 6-on-3 opportunity. And Ian LaPerriere, the head coach of Lehigh Valley, decided not to put their best offensive player out there. You wrote about it. You have more of a more calming approach to things, more sensible. Tell us a little bit about, you know, how you perceived what went down.
Well, so there's a few things here. I mean, first of all, when I got to be honest with you, when I wrote this down, I didn't actually get a chance to watch his shift by shift. Before I hopped on the show, though, I actually did my homework and I was able to actually sit down and watch his shift by shift play. It was a bad game for him. I mean, he was just not engaged at all. Every offensive rush, you're looking at two forwards and where's Morgan Frost? I mean, you'd at least see a defenseman come into the zone before him. He just was not on his game. And you could tell that LaPerriere kind of gradually started to limit his shifts. He went from the first period, I believe he had 10, second one, he had 8. And by the time it got to the third, it was like, I'll give you these first few minutes. If you don't show me something different, I'm putting you on the bench. Hmm. When you're looking at a guy like Morgan Frost, who I think that the fan base in the organization is putting a level of pressure on him to kind of jump into this top six role before he's really ever proven that that's what he's going to be at the NHL level. You need to find a way to build his confidence. What, he played 2 games last season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he spent a lot. I mean, ice time was very hard to get during COVID. If he's having a bad game and you put him on a 6-on-3 and he continues to look poor and stand out negatively, in my mind, it has the opposite effect. You need to build up this player's confidence. If he's not going to succeed, then maybe it is the move. And maybe he has to learn a lesson. If you're going to play like, you know, if you're not going to be engaged, if you're not going to show that extra killer instinct, we have no time for you.
Here's something. Is this maybe, I guess maybe on a lower example, is this a Ben Simmons scenario we could be seeing, but not really hearing about?
Better not be.
Jim, you know what? It scares me because it's more reminiscent of like a Vorobiev. The guy like makes the team and it for like a couple of games and gets sent back down and has no like extra gear to show he belongs in the NHL. Like, what have we heard about Morgan Frost since we've delved into it? There were non-mandatory events at the skate zone. You don't have to go, Morgan, but you probably should be there. He doesn't go. That looks bad. You're not an established NHL player. You're trying to make the NHL. You think you want to make a smart move of the organization, an organization run by a guy who did not draft you. He doesn't go to that. Okay, fine. He shows up in preseason camp, whatever. Didn't impress any of us. Didn't really stand out. You know, it wasn't horrendous, but he didn't really stand out. Coaches seemed to like a little bit of what he did. Fletcher says, I want you to have some confidence. I'm going to send you down, much like what happened to Farabee a couple of years ago. Farabee didn't quite make the opening lineup. Vigneault said, do the right things. You'll be back here. Look at Farabee now. Look at him now. You know, Frost, complete opposite. Apparently, he has defensive deficiencies. It's a lack of – I don't want to say a lack of trying, but it seems something that he could just put the extra effort in because he has the skill. People have compared him to – I know he's not the same player, but Giroux's skill set. Like, he's that talented with the puck. You just got to show a little extra, and it seems like he's not doing it. He's not engaged. Are you kidding me? You have a shot at making the NHL. There's a glaring need for a center, like for you, and you're not going to show us the effort? That's a massively concerning. That is more than just getting his legs under him, getting his timing down. That scares the piss out of me.
you know what's interesting? Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead, John. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. So I went back and was watching some of his junior footage. And first of all, OHL is a very finesse league. They don't play defense the way the WHL does. They're not a rough league like the WHL. But if you go back and watch most of his goals, the amount of space that this guy is given, there is almost no defense being played, or it's a fast break. It's really like he just gets to demonstrate his shot and the skill with his hands, where there's really no need for anything else. And one of the biggest worries about him, even though, you know, we were all ready to be like, Ron Hextall is the draft genius, there's no way that he didn't just draft a star, was, could his game translate from the OHL, which really just suited his style, to the professional level? Mm-hmm. I mean, we kind of forgot that that was a question mark when all of a sudden we needed him to save the team. But it's always been there. So I think that, again, we've kind of been trained to put these guys on pedestals that they're just not supposed to be on. So he just might not be NHL quality.
That's even Jordan worse. He's not given the effort to get there. And then let's say he did, and then we find out, well, that's a shame. But like, he's not even given the effort, for God's sake. It's like, you can get somewhere with effort. We got guys who aren't as talented, who show heart, who find roles. You know, it's like, this guy's being gifted a role, and he's just like, it's beneath him or something. I can't explain it. Like, it's so weird.
When you're the best all the time, sometimes your head is your biggest enemy. You know, I mean, it's a tough thing for some people to overcome. And if he's just not used to this struggle, some people just can't handle it. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying he can't, don't, and nobody get all crazy. I'm not saying he can't, but the signs are showing that maybe he just doesn't have the resilience.
Scary.
Values high, baby. See ya.
Hurdle time. Jim's holding back. Jim's holding back. He wants to say it. He gets mentioned every show now, rightfully so.
Maybe it'll catch fire, man. Maybe somehow it'll catch on. Hey, yeah. I mean, the San Jose Sharks, they need all the players they can get. Yeah, send over Knack. Take TK out of that trade now, though, by the way.
Never mind.
Yeah, never mind. He looks good. We'll keep him.
And then all of a sudden, that cap space, me can't make that deal.
Hayes, you're going to have to come back in April instead.
Yeah, there you go. First transaction's already made. He's a long-term injury report. So it's the path is set. All right. Frost is in the minors, not showing effort. Ben Simmons in it down there. No, I'm just kidding. John, I got to ask you, are you surprised by what's transpiring with Morgan Frost, or is this sort of something that maybe you foresaw and it's like, eh, they'll give him a crack eventually, but, you know, it's maybe not going to go great?
I mean, to be completely honest with you, I was one of those people who was Team Frost over Farabee when it all, when it was kind of, we were comparing the two, just, I think because I was obsessed with his skill level. And if he got it all together, the player that he could be at the NHL level, just to me was on a, another level. But now, right, when he got demoted or sent down to Lehigh Valley, I was expecting him to light it on fire. I truly was. I was, you know, getting ready for all the blowhards to be like, he'll be up in a week. Can you believe it? My son's calling his name now. But he's really just not showing anything. So, yeah, I'm a little surprised, and it's got me concerned, because if you're, again, kind of like what Jack said, right? If you're not going to show the fight and the snarl now, when?
We're like coming to the end. Like, how many more like opportunities you're gonna get? You know,
no more excuses.
It's not that, not
out.
Not that this is necessarily a fair comparison, because they're two, not, I wouldn't say polar opposite players, but they're pretty different. Would you compare this sending down and the opportunity being given almost to like what they did with Scott Laughton?
Yeah, possibly, possibly. I mean, I do think that. I think that in the organization's mind, and maybe not as much as Ron Hextall because they didn't draft him, I think they were hoping that it would be like a quick two-game thing, you know? Like, let's just see what he's got. Let's get that confidence up, and let's bring him back up here. I also think that the leash is going to be shorter with Morgan Frost. I really think that Chuck Fletcher, rightfully so, is in win-now mode. And now his mind might be shifting towards, okay, if Morgan Frost starts having some good games in Lehigh Valley, a trade chip.
Oh, yeah.
Get me somebody. And I mean that in all seriousness. Use his value at its highest and get you something that's going to help you win now, especially if you don't really know what's going to happen with this kid.
I think you're covering your butt, you know. And even if he does turn out to be something, you know, decent, I mean, he's not going to – just my opinion here, you know, and John, you could tell me if I'm wrong, I guess. He's not going to be an 80, 90, 100-point player. You know, he's going to be 50, 60-point guy. Maybe as a, you know, he's on a line with some good wingers. Maybe a pot 70 points. I don't know. But, hey, I'll trade a Stanley Cup for, you know, a 60, 70-point center, winger, any day of the week. You know, if Morgan Frost can indirectly help you win a Stanley Cup by helping you go out and get Tomas Hertl, I'm doing it. I don't care. This kid can have, dude, he can have 20 great years in the NHL for the rest of his life. All I want is one Stanley Cup. That's it, you know?
Right.
So,
no. And I think, too, if he made the team out of camp maybe this year or last year, right? You know, I mean, I know the injuries really kind of screwed things up, but you might even say he could be that 70, 80 point player, because I do really think that the talent exists. But the longer it takes, yeah, the more and more you're just like, it's hard to believe at this point that he could be any more than like a 50 point player at most.
I mean, and he's young. So, like, right. You know, I do get kind of worked up there. He's young, he's 22. You know, I'll give a guy to like 23, 24. And if he's nothing by 24, he's probably just is what he is.
Yo, he's probably just Jordan Wheel.
Can you imagine?
Jordan Wheel produced at the AHL level.
Hey, yeah, he's true. He's rocking in the KHL right he's now, in the too.
KHL, yeah.
Keeping the dream alive.
Well, I don't know, Frost.
Good for him. I wonder if he still has that same pregame routine over in Russia. Probably not, right? Could you imagine? Those guys see him over there.
I think he probably does. Like that doesn't go away because you change leagues.
His pregame ritual now is a shot of vodka and a line of blow at Yuri Laterra, and then they go out and play.
They don't allow pregame rituals over there in Russia. They just walk you out to the ice and you do your thing, and then they like bring you back to your room.
Yeah, don't talk to anybody. Just play. You just play.
Yeah, you go play now.
Go play.
All right, so second guy on the list. A guy I think a lot of us forgot about, you, at least for myself. And really the only reason I remembered him, John, is because you added him to your article here. A player drafted in the second round, I want to say in 2019? Everything seems so far away now.
Yes.
Bobby Brink, not the best year last year, kind of put a bad taste in everybody's mouth. What's he doing this year?
Well, first, I do want to rewind a little bit because the thing with covering prospects and following prospects is narratives kill players. And for Bobby Brink, right, that was the draft where we had the opportunity to draft Cole Caulfield and we went Cam York. So all of a sudden we draft Bobby Brink and he's Cole Caulfield light.
That's like, what you heard right away, right?
Right. Oh, don't worry. Like this guy, he can score goals too. So he's Cole Caulfield light. And again, what are you doing? He has a really great freshman year. I think it was something like 11 goals, 13 assists in 28 games. I know it sounds like I'm very exact, but I am guessing there. But then sophomore year, right, middle of COVID, off season, you don't have much ice time, was a mess. I mean, you watch this guy play, and one of the knocks on him when he was drafted was his skating kind of seemed like less of an issue his freshman year. Sophomore year, it looked like a big problem. He just could not keep the pace with everybody else. His stride was so laborious. He was behind every play. And this is a finisher. He's a goal scorer. And if he's behind every play, you know, you can't be waiting there forever for him to show up so he can shoot the puck. So you now fast forward to this season, right? It's really make or break time for him, because if he has another down year, like his sophomore year, you're going, okay, this is who he is. He peaked Cole Caulfield life, peaked freshman year at Denver. Completely different ball game. He's already scored more goals than he did last year. Granted, it's three. All right, it's three, but three of four games. I think he's got 7 points. He had 11 last year. One of the things that I'm noticing is that the coaching staff is putting him in the best positions to succeed. His legs, even if he improves, are always going to be what holds him back. He's never going to be one of those guys that could create offense on his own. However, you get him the puck in the offensive zone in a good shooting lane, he'll finish. And that's what Denver's doing. They're putting him in the perfect position, typically on the power play, or he scored a great goal off a faceoff where he's just right in front of the net. He has two right in front of the net on the right side where he could just get it, quick release. As long as the Flyers or the Phantoms or whatever pro team he goes to next has the luxury to utilize him in that way, I really think that those skills can translate nicely to the professional game. I think that sophomore year was a thing of the past, and now this is the Bobby Brink that we're going to see. And I'm going to shut up now and let somebody else talk because I could just keep going. But yeah,
I could have listened to you
all. Enjoying that. That was great. Yeah. I had to stop. That was good. I mean, it started off rough, reminding me of the skipping of Cole Caulfield not once but twice. And whenever you take a light version of somebody else, you usually get what you pay for. So. Yeah, COVID threw a wrench in everything, and I did hear a pro scout, I read, say that they hate his skating. Hate's a very strong word, but I did read that, and it's a shame. It's like the Matthew Strome thing, you know, it's just the same deal. The whole family has issues with skating, which kills me, but yeah, fourth round pick, hey, you never know, but his skating might hold him back. I literally haven't heard the guy's name, and I can't tell you how long. So the guy who's supposed to take the bad taste out of our mouth for not selecting Cole Caulfield has put a bad taste in our mouth. So that's not looking good. You know what, though? If they continue to put him in the right positions to use him and he continues to produce, people pay for goals. Not even that we trade him. Just like flat out goals are an important big thing. And, you know, you figure out the rest later. But if you keep doing that, maybe there is some light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, and I think, too, you know, if you're thinking long term, right, if we're just going to slot him into the NHL roster in like three seasons, right, you put him third line on the wing, PP1, right? You know, you make sure that he is on your power play one because that's where he's going to do the most damage. And you just have to shelter him. He's not somebody, again, who is going to ever be a great skater. And that's one of the things that also concerns me with Tyson Forrester. Because not to go on a tangent or anything, but I was so against that pick because of his skating. And Bobby Brink was really the same thing. If you look at what's going on up here, up top, and what's going on with his legs, it's like two different people. It's like someone's on his shoulders with the stick while the legs are trying to figure it out. It's just not very good. But again, he's smart, which is something you need. He can shoot. He can pass. So if you can find a way to compensate his skating.
Yeah, we do that. We create a lot of words on this. Compensate's going in the Hall of Fame now.
There could potentially be a future, but college season is still very, very early. Like, he could peak and suck for the rest of the year, and everything I say now just sounds like a bunch of garbage.
So here's something interesting that I'm looking at here. All of his points, I think all of his points have come even strength. Is that a strong point of his game, or is he more of a power play point producer? Or are we going to see, because Travis Konecny is kind of more like an even strength scorer. Is that Bobby Brink?
No, because if it's kind of like how the goals are scored, right? He's in open space, right? He has a clear lane with his shot. Someone is setting up his shot with a really nice cross ice pass. To me, at the professional level, that seems more of a power play situation. You know, I mean, yes, 5-on-5 set offense, yeah, cool, he could succeed. I just feel like you get more of those set opportunities on the power play in the NHL.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also worth mentioning, fifth in the in overall NCHC scoring. Only four players ahead of him. One's a sophomore. The other three are seniors. Bobby Brink's a junior. Is there any significance to that?
No, because also, if you take a look at Denver's team, they're really good. Yeah, they have a lot of skilled players on that team. Carter Savoy is fantastic. Yeah, I mean, you have to look at the players around him, too. It's a good team. They might win the NCHC.
Okay. All right. Let's if you guys have any other questions about Bobby Brink for John, we can move on to our third player here. All right. Third player, John.
There's a third player?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, who?
Connor McLennan? I figured, that should be an easy guy for you to talk about. Anyway, you know a lot about Connor.
Yeah, so Connor McLennan to me is the epitome of getting excited for a sixth or seventh round pick. Connor McLennan has always been, again, a goal scorer. I feel like we're talking about those kind of players today, but that's pretty much all he is. He is not physical. He is not a good skater. He's another guy that really needs to have the play developed for him. And I guess you could almost say that I'm describing Bobby Brink in a way, right?
Same size too, basically, which is something.
Right. But I also think that Bobby Brink, he has a level of compete and intelligence that Connor McLennan just doesn't have. And the reason that I really like bringing up guys like McLennan is because there are people out there who just like to look at the numbers when it comes to prospects, and they immediately think, oh, okay, this guy is going to be in the NHL. Because what has he got? I think it's like six or seven goals so far this season. Yeah. I mean, granted, if you ever want to watch a WHL game right now, throw on the Winnipeg Ice, because they are leaps and bounds better than everyone else they're playing. They're winning games like 8-0.
Oh my God.
it's just one of those things where it's like, be excited that he's giving you a reason to talk about him, but don't expect anything out of this guy.
All right.
Okay. I got one for you. I want to talk about a fourth player, but I really want your honest opinion here. The Destroyer.
So I have a bad taste in my mouth for Elliot Desnoyers, and it has nothing to do with Elliot Desnoyers' play. It's just the way that some people just hype this guy up is insane to me. I mean, Derek, to get under my skin, calls him the next Gretzky. Or Gretzky light, if you will. but he's an interesting case too, because when you watch him play, he has a lot more of a complete game in my mind. I mean, he's effective in the on the offensive side of the puck, on the defensive side of the puck. Do I think that he could produce at the level that he is in the QMJHL? In the pros, no. But I still think that you have a foundation to be a solid bottom six forward who might surprise you every once in a while. And I think that when it comes to him, right, the path is just making sense. He is progressing every year. He's being put in leadership roles. His team is getting better along with him. It just, to me, it seems like there's more of a realistic chance with him. I don't think he will ever come anywhere near the amount of, you know, goals and assists that he has in junior. But still, I think there's something there.
The compete right. level there when he out-muscled Morgan Frost in a training camp. I mean, if he wants it more, they're going to start to look towards him for sure. Was he named captain of his team? I thought I read that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, just more things for the resume that exactly. look good. You know, and I get what you're saying about a complete player. Looks like he was drafted and then guys on his team either went to their pro teams, AHL teams or whatever. He moved up in the lineup and he's got a little bit more to his game than we thought. So, yeah, it's definitely a guy to be excited about. I am glad Kyle asked about him because when you were describing McClellan and you were talking about reasons to be excited about a later round pick, it's like, well, the people are kind of excited about Denoyer, but I did like what I saw from this training camp. So I'm glad that question was asked. Hey, you never know, right?
And actually, you know, talking to a few scouts, a lot of people felt like Denoyer could have gone in that fourth round range. And I really do think there's a drastic difference between your fourth and your fifth round pick and your sixth and your seventh round pick. By the time you get to the sixth and seventh round, it's just like, I swear they're in there just with the, one of those bingo things with a bunch of names and they'll just pull somebody out. Hey, this is who we're taking. All right, let's go. Because really, the chances are really slim. Somebody on Twitter said to me when I was talking about McLennan, they go, well, what about Bobby Hull? I was like, what about him?
What about Henrik Lundqvist?
Yeah.
He's a six round pick. Yeah. Six round pick who could score goals. That's all pretty much all he did. I'm like, okay, you're right. So pick the one guy who was able to do it. Like,
The one person who pulls it off that sets the precedent going forward, right? What's the percentage on those guys making the NHL at all, let alone being a Hall of Famer? Like, come on.
Right. I know. I know. But
so can we keep talking prospects? Because there's I don't want to ruin any upcoming articles, but there's
no go for it.
So moving more towards the pro level here, this is a guy I've openly called a bust on HW Radio had him on.
Yep.
How do you feel about a guy like Isaiah Radcliffe?
Lost. I think he's lost in the shuffle at this point. I think in order for him to kind of keep stride, he needed to have a great first year in Lehigh Valley. People got excited because he had a 50 goal season with Guelph. But I just think at this point, you know, he's never going to be put in a position in Lehigh Valley where he's going to become the player that he would need to be to succeed at the professional level. You know, your opportunity as a prospect, in my mind, especially when you hit Lehigh Valley, is really, really slim. You get about a season and a half before they start to kind of slide you down the ranks. And when they start to slide you down the ranks, right, your chances of actually making the team go down. And he's just one of those guys now where it's like, yeah, I mean, when Maxim Sushko is getting more chances to play with the Flyers, and then that's a problem. Yeah, I don't know. I was excited about him, but he's somebody where it's just lost in the shuffle.
And it's a shame because if that guy could just play a power forward role
right
with his size, he would be unstoppable.
Right.
But he refuses to play a physical game.
Well, again, you have to remember where you play, and you know, that's why so many people are taking the college route now. Because the college route, for a bunch of different reasons, kind of emulates the professional game more than junior hockey. And he was successful in junior hockey playing that finesse game. And everybody knew that with that size, it just wasn't going to work that way. But it's harder than, you know, we could predict to just completely change who you are on a dime. You know, ask Sam Moran and trying to go to left wing.
Well, I don't want to. Flyers better not draft any more OHL players. I had it. No more.
Now we just sign undrafted free agents.
Yeah.
They are Avon.
Skill players.
Right. Yeah, just keep doing that. No more OHL like guys.
I'm enjoying the waiver wires.
I feel like I'm just being lied to every year now. Morgan Frost, 100 points in his junior seasons, blah, blah, blah. Isaac Ratcliffe, 50 goals. And you get all juiced up because you see all the big, gaudy numbers. And it's like, well, it turns out the OHL is more of a finesse league. And, you know, once you get to the big boy leagues, you know, you can't really, you don't have that time and space. It's like, well,
you also brought in probably the most skeptic and critical person on Prospect Planet to be your head. I've got more negative things to say than positive for most people.
You fit right in this show, then.
Who would you say? Then who would you say your most positive spin on prospect right now in the Flyers prospect pool? Who would you say you're the highest on?
So close to pros would be Cam York. I really think that Cam York has a really strong foundation. I think that when he kind of has those hiccups, they are just those moments. It's not like continuous. But if you're moving outside of the pro league, at least North American pro league, a player that really has caught my excitement, is Emil Andre. And this is somebody who a lot of people are like, I can't believe we took this guy because his scouting reports aren't great his draft year. But what I've been looking at is the league that he's in. So he's in the tier underneath the SHL in Sweden, which is called the Hockey Allsvenskan. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong.
Not perfect.
But his play, his time on ice, his usage, every possible thing that you could keep a statistical measure that I'd understand has gone up. The coaches are clearly very confident in his play. And in the beginning of this season, I was like, okay, you're being put in every situation. You're clearly getting top line minutes. Yet, you know, your physicality is up, your battles on the board are up, but where's the offense? Because you're supposed to have a little bit of offense. And then started producing some offense. So I believe he's at 7 points or something in like the 5 or 6 games that he's played. I'm intrigued to see what he can bring to the SHL. I think that promotion has to happen soon, at least from a selfish, you know, developmental standpoint, not necessarily for the betterment of the team. But he's one that I'm high on because, again, that trajectory just seems to be making sense. So what? Pump the brakes, right? He hasn't played professional hockey yet, but he's another one that I'm pretty high on. Alexei the KHL.
Koslov.
Alexei Koslov. In the KHL, 19 years old, one of the best goalies in the KHL right now. That's just unheard of. I mean, that's like a 19-year-old succeeding in the NHL, that goalie. That just doesn't happen. So he's another one where it's like, okay, do we really need a goalie? Maybe not. Hopefully not. But still, when you see those signs of success at the professional level, you can't help but be a little excited.
Wow. I mean, what was he, a third round pick in 2020 or 2021?
This past draft.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, pretty insane. And he was already making a name for himself in the KHL last year. So, I mean, that's just something that, you know, you can't ignore because the KHL isn't like the SHL. It is, some people would argue, and I wouldn't argue, but some people would argue that it's right up there with the National Hockey League. So, like I said, I wouldn't argue that, but some people would, mostly Russians would argue that, but still, I guess that those would probably be my top three.
Where does he fall in line with the other goalies in the system, like the Ustamenkos, the Arizons, the Sandstroms?
So I was really high on Ustamenko. I think the injuries are going to hold him back. I, you know, again, it's a competition, right? You've got all these people vying for spots, I think that, you know, he kind of goes down a rung. I still think after Carter Hart, you have Urson. And then to me, after Urson would be Alexi K. Some people want to put Fedotov up there, and I completely understand that. The reason that I'm turned off with Fedotov is because I really just don't think he's ever coming to North America. This is a 7th round pick, 24 years old. You know, he was a late bloomer, and all of a sudden you have your Russian goaltender succeeding in the Russian league. Again, I think he's made it. I don't think there really is a reason for him to come to North America. And then Sandstrom, I went from being really high on him to just thinking he peaked.
Hmm.
You know, so I think you go Hart, Urson, Alexi K.
Wow. I like it.
You think any of these guys get moved eventually? Like, you can't keep all these prospects, right? Like, come on, there's too many goalie prospects.
I mean, yeah, San Jose could use a goalie, right, Jim?
I read my mind.
They want Martin Jones.
I mean, right. You would think that they would move somebody, but guess what? You can't have enough goaltending in your system.
Yeah.
You know, all it takes is one moment and you're looking for your next goaltender. So,
yeah, that's a good point. Good point. And why don't we end the show on that note? So, John, thanks for coming on, hanging out, talking prospects with us. Where can people find you on Twitter? Obviously, they can find your work over at hwhockey.net. Where else can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at PodStreetGove. Typically, I'm just providing prospect updates or yelling at other morons on Twitter, but that's about all I do. Prospect updates and moron yelling.
Yeah, obviously, and I'm sure if you guys are listening to our show now, you've already heard about the Pod Street Bullies. Make sure you check out John on his show with Derek, Hoagie and Casey. Great stuff over there as always, guys. What do we miss tonight, guys? Anything before we wrap up the show?
Just my Yeats player of the week goes to Captain Claude.
Yes. Are you wearing the glasses? Dude. I turned away. Look at those things.
The glasses are flared up, baby.
Ladies and gentlemen, Halloween is mere days away now. Actually, I think it's like 12 days away. You need a Halloween costume, head over to yeatsofficial.com. Use our code HW at checkout. Christmas is coming up. Black Friday shopping, whatever you do, use the code HW at checkout. Once again, yeats.com. Go get yourself some glasses. Go buy somebody else some glasses. You got good stuff over there. Jack's looking good. I wish you would have wore them for the whole show, Jack.
I got very ill.
All right, Claude Giroux, congratulations, Yeats Player of the Week. That's going to do it for the episode, boys and girls. Thanks for hanging out with us as always. The next time you watch us, it'll be a live post-game show tomorrow night after the Flyers-Bruins game. For John, Kyle, and Jack, I'm Jim. Stop using artificial sweetener. Enjoy the goal montage. See you guys tomorrow night.
Giroux, the blast. He scores! Minutes to play in this first period. Yandel had to connect. The shot. Saved around. Rebound. He scores! Goes cross ice to Braun. Now they center it. They score! Here is Broussard centering Ellis. He scores! Two newcomers team up. Ellis is first as a Flyer. Makes it 4-0 Philadelphia. And they float it ahead to Van Riemsdyk, who turns with it. Flips it beautifully to Braun, who shot. He scores! Grubauer got a lot of it, but not enough. Time. Here it comes. Atkinson in. Quick shot. Save. Rebound. Verby. He scores! The old shot pass. And Verby hammers it home. 6-1 Philadelphia as this line continues to hum.